Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, the Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast. So if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. My guest from Ontario in Canada, three times best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and a TEDx MC, which is interesting, host of two podcasts, and like myself, he's a podcasting coach. Please welcome Carl Richards.
Roy, it's good to see you and hear you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem at all. So, I mean, I mentioned the bullet points, but if you want to introduce yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. As you mentioned, I'm born and raised in Ontario, Canada. Spent 25 years in radio broadcasting. It was my first love. Actually, acting was my first love. But for every actor that makes it, there's 10,000 saying, would you like fries with that? So I chose radio, which is almost going the same route, actually, at least in these parts. But enjoyed a 25-year radio career. And in and around then, they say you haven't made it in broadcasting, Roy, until you've been fired from your first job. So I was fired. Yay! Somewhere around 2010. And that's when I decided to do this speaking thing. And I'd spent years in Toastmasters and somebody said, you're good at doing evaluations. You should be a speaking coach. So I did that part-time for the longest time. Did end up getting back into radio. And that's where the podcasting bug really bit me. Somebody said, you should start a podcast. And I started humming and hawing and not even knowing what this was. This is around 2012 when podcasts were still in diapers. And then, started a podcast 2019 with a little bit of help from a guy by the name of Sam Crowley, who he's not the father of podcasting, but he certainly does go back several years having his show. And then that thing called COVID hit, which allowed me the opportunity to pivot my speaking business, which I always wanted to take it full time and make it a full time gig. But it just never really happened until COVID. So I got out of the radio world. And now I still serve as speakers, but more in the podcasting or virtual space to help them, as you know, get into this space, because it's a great space to be. That's a little bit about me. Married, no kids. We like it that way. Not that there's anything wrong with kids, but I have nieces and nephews that keep me occupied. So,
brilliant, brilliant. I mean, your career kind of the whole lot kind of came together to what you're doing. So I suppose let's touch on the radio first, because
yeah,
some people aspire to that, but in reality, podcasting is radio as well. So it's trained you to be a fantastic podcaster.
Yeah, it was a very easy transition, shall we say? So what I loved about radio, one of the reasons I got into it was at least when I got into it, we're talking the early to mid 90s, it wasn't too far of a stretch from acting, because you were still creating characters that you would bring to the airwaves. And it's evolved since then. It's more information based, but you would still create those characters, and those would be the characters that became either part of your persona or part of your show. And this whole theater of the mind and this concept that you can create content and allow people to, you know, take action based on it, whatever that action is. And podcasting, as you know, Roy, is exactly the same. It's creating this content that takes people to that next step to take whatever action it is. And it doesn't matter what show you listen to, they're pretty much all, you know, action based at some point at the end, even if it's as simple as sign up, subscribe, listen to my this, go to my YouTube channel. It's still, you know, asking them to take that next step. So that was the thing about radio, was always wanting to be in that theater of the mind space, and much enjoyed it. And town to town, up and down the dial, though. I think I worked at 6 or 7 different radio stations in my career. And I know that sounds like a lot, but there are other broadcasters that could probably add double that to their Rolodex of stations that they worked at. And it's funny because, you know, you've worked at more than one station when you're sitting at a station and you forget the call letters. And I remember on more than one occasion, but specifically sitting in an FM station in Kingston, Ontario, which at the time was 98.3 Fly FM, and saying AM 1220 CJRL. And I'm like, wait a minute, where did that come from? Like, it's completely different frequency and, you know, amplitude versus, you know, frequency modulation, you know, AM versus FM. I'm like, well, how did I do that? It's like, because it's in your brain, right? So yeah, that certainly happened a couple of times, but the transition to podcasting was simple. What wasn't easy, though, I have to share this with you. What wasn't easy was the speaking wasn't a problem. Knowing how to work the microphone wasn't a problem. Speaking in a microphone and, you know, even talking by myself without guests wasn't a problem. But knowing, okay, now that I have this audio and it's being recorded, and when I started my show, it was audio only. Now that it's recorded, now what? I mean, if it was radio, you would just edit it and put it on the airwaves. Where did it go after you edited it? So that took me a while to figure that out, how to get it from, and this is a technical back end of things, but it took me a while to figure out, oh, you need a host site, and that pokes you and takes you to where you need to go. And but, you know, now that I'm in this space, you're right, it's so similar to broadcasting, but what's different about it is there's no limit, there's no, you know, heavily formatted way of doing it like radio today is in a lot of ways. You know, you have rock stations that have to look and sound like this. You have country stations that have to look and sound like this. You have easy listening stations that have to look and sound like this because that's the appeal to their audience. With a podcast, it's, well, who's my ideal client or who's my ideal audience that I want to attract? And that's going to be, you know, Mike, that'll be different for you as it is for me, as it is for anybody. So you can really fine tune it and make it yours. And it's a magical place. It's almost like Disneyland in a way.
And for those, because I've come across a few people and they have their podcast going out on a radio station as well.
Yes.
Like, have you seen people do that? And yeah, what's the advantages and maybe disadvantages of doing that?
Yeah, I have seen people do that. And some of the ones that I know who do it are leveraging their community radio stations. So the ones that aren't necessarily making money from it, but they're trying to build their audience and grow their audience. So for a show that's localized, I mean, there's an individual just up the road from me who hosts a very localized show talking about Kingston and the local community. Although he has guests from other parts of the world, he still basically is centered around, you know, theming the show about Kingston. And he pumps it out through a community radio station, as well as the radio station. So two radio stations, actually, a community radio station and a radio station that's attached to a university. So he has the opportunity to build the audience, number one, so he gets a few more listeners. The disadvantage is because radio is so formatted. Now, maybe not in the community radio sense. Community radio stations tend to not be as formatted. They tend to be more free-flowing with their formats or block programming. But that makes it challenging too, because you don't have the same, you know, you're not able to say, well, my listeners are these people. These are the people I want to have listening to my show. It's no, here's my show. I'm putting it out there. The other challenge is some radio stations will want the programming, but they'll want it as a barter or for free, as opposed to wanting to pay for your programming. Some of the larger stations or some of the larger podcasts might be able to leverage differently, but certainly for a lot of podcasters leveraging their community radio stations or local radio stations, it's a harder sell. Everything works, you know, everything ends up being about money. The people that want to make more money will say, well, okay, but if you want to be on radio, you're either paying to play on this space, or if we're giving it to you for free, you have no control over it, right? So you kind of lose a little bit there, in my opinion. It still has, again, if you're using it to solely build your audience, that's great. But there's definitely some things to think about before just saying, I want my podcast on a radio station. And again, if you're somebody that's famously known like Oprah Winfrey, okay, sure, absolutely, she's going to be on a huge network, you know, radio and television, She's going to be on all the podcasting channels. She's going to be on YouTube, but it's Oprah Winfrey, right? She doesn't have to prove her worth. Everyone knows it, right? But if it's Carl Richards, it's a harder sell. So,
and I see as well that, like, some of them, because I've looked into it, some of them want you to do live, which means well, you're committing to a certain time. And that's what I love about podcasting, because, like, I can go away. I mean, there's times I went to Estonia for a month, but I had everything organized and I had it all scheduled and I was able to release it. And it's like, if nothing happened, whereas if you're doing live, you kind of have to really schedule yourself and put everything around. And if there's a birthday or a wedding or something like that, it's kind of, you can't go, I'm taking today off. You're no longer your boss. You're like an employee.
Yeah, that's one disadvantage for live, for sure. The other disadvantage is, and I'm not saying don't do live if you're confident and comfortable doing live. I did live radio 25 years, but I'll tell you, whenever I could record something, I did. And the reason for that is you want to put forward the best version of yourself, and you never know when something's going to go wrong. And, you know, the best example I've been giving people in the last couple of years is, remember the Academy Awards of 2022, you know, the slap heard around the world. That's why you cautiously don't go live, because unless you have 100% prepped your guest, you don't know what they're going to say. You are committed, as you said, Roy, to that time. But then you're also, in this sense, you're more committed to the radio show and less committed to the podcast. I've seen how it works for some online radio companies, and they'll say, we'll give you a show, and as a value add, we'll give you a podcast, we'll put you out on all the podcast channels, but you have a radio show. And they'll throw some numbers and say, oh, we have 2 million listeners, all that stuff. So it sounds attractive. It's usually an investment, so it's a marketing tool, and it's great. But the podcast becomes secondary. And I don't like the fact that the podcast is secondary. The other thing that's interesting, Roy, and you probably know this, is that on-demand listening has taken a bit of a back seat. Oh, sorry. On-demand listening has surpassed live stream. So on-demand, just recently, Edison Research says that on-demand, so podcasting, has gone past the radio, be it digital radio or terrestrial radio. It's gone past that. So to say, I need you here at 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, doesn't matter the time zone, every single week, people aren't tuning in. They're catching a replay somewhere already. And that's been proven. And I think it will continue to prove that. So there really is, in my opinion, not a huge advantage to it, because people aren't, that's not how we listen. And that's not how we, you know, absorb content.
And
anymore,
to be honest,
it's shifting.
The beauty with podcasting is, I mean, you might get a little bit of promotion at the start, which you understand, because a lot of the times that's how they make their income. But with radio, you're getting on the hour, and sometimes even on the half hour, 5 to 10 minutes of negativity that you're bringing, and people just are sick of it. Like, and why there's nothing positive in these things, and why it's done around the world that you have to listen to an hour of negativity and then ads in between as well. Whereas you can put on Spotify or Pandora, whatever country you're in, and listen to the music you love, and also the podcasting, and there's no ads and nothing, and you just enjoy, so you're not wasting time.
Well, and picture this too, Mike, on that point. What if your show is also a very heavy show? What if your show has heavy content? You know, there are some shows out there that are lifestyle-oriented or talk about women that have gone through hell, or men that have, you know, reinvented themselves, whatever. If your show is heavy and that 10 minutes of the top of the hour, your news and all that is heavy, it's the tune out factor. People want to smile. They want to feel good. Right. So being able to access that content on demand is so much more of an advantage. And honestly, I mean, I don't know what your schedule is like, Roy, but I know I can't always be at a certain place at a certain time at 3 o'clock to listen to the whatever it is. I don't have time in my day for appointment tuning. And, you know, we're seeing that with a lot of people who even I'm still a lover of radio, and I will, here in Canada, we have our national broadcaster is CBC, and they have a program that they run at the top of the hour at lunchtime. And I love to listen to it. It's a talk show. It's very engaging. It talks about news or things that are going on in the day or in the world. And it's all kinds of different topics. It's phenomenal. But there's times where I miss that first 15 minutes and I go, oh, I just got, I don't want to miss it. I think it's appointment tuning. And I feel like I should be there. So there's that also that mindset of, well, what if I miss it? So it's that FOMO, it's that fear of missing out that pulls us from our desks or tasks, whatever else we're doing. Whereas with a podcast, and again, be it video or audio, it doesn't matter. It's just, again, you can engage it whenever you want. But the appointment tuning or that live stream, catch it now, it's not as convenient. I might want to listen at midnight. I don't because I'm usually sleeping, but that might be the best time for some people is at some crazy hour or 6 o'clock in the morning when they wake up, not having to wait till noon or one or three or whatever it is to catch their favorite show. So I think that's another appeal to the podcasting space is when you have time, that's when you can engage. Be engaged
and double dipping as well. Like, I mean, if you're ironing, if you're cycling, if you're going to take the dog for a walk, whatever you're
exactly
doing, you listen to what you love on that time. And it's like, if you have to listen to 3 o'clock radio show, and it's like, yeah, so yep. I'm with you. I think the podcasting is way better. And when I was doing the research on this, I saw one of the links I found, John, Audia, and I had gone into that at the very early stages. And I started doing it for the crypto. I was saying, okay, this is different because you're uploading your audio, which isn't connected to your RSS feed, which in turn is like, it's safety in one way, because actually a friend of mine was removed from Spotify and they wouldn't give him, they just kept refusing to transfer it. And I don't know anybody else. Yeah. And I was doing very similar content because I'm exposing a lot of fraud and corruption as well. And I was kind of getting worried, are they going to do it to me? Never gave it back to him. And he just kind of threw in the towel and he got sick of it. But with the audio, I thought, okay, this is another way. But what happened is when I was doing it first, I was like, okay, I'm getting numbers here. Like I'm getting not major, but I was calculating it, it's all adding on. And then it was the next five, there was zero. And I was like, what's going on? But I just went in now today. And it's like, they've obviously modified it a bit that it's a lot more modern and they've got the audience and where you are and everything. So there's decent numbers I start using again. But just have you been how long have you been using that? And what's your kind of experience with?
Yeah, it's funny because I had a chance to chat with it's Amit Kakrija, I think is the guy's name. Great guy, fantastic guy, fantastic concept too. And the experiences I think was very similar to yours. And one of the things I didn't like about it, I still think it's a great idea because it's a great way to compartmentalize or have a directory for all of that audio content because radio has been around for over 100 years, right? So we're talking how much audio content has been lost that, you know, if only it were in a directory like what we're doing with YouTube, which is basically a behemoth of a directory of videos and music and all kinds of stuff. Anyhow, I had a very similar experience where the numbers just were not jiving. I haven't been on it in a few months. I stopped posting content because I wasn't getting enough traction. But I think that there's certainly some validity to that. The other thing I didn't like about it is it doesn't connect. Like you say, it's separate from the RSS feed, which is great, but there's no way to combine, unless you're doing it yourself somehow, your numbers, your traction, because you want to be able to say, this episode got 500, 10,000, whatever the number, it doesn't matter the number, it got this many hits, this many people tuned into it. But if there's 400 here and 400 here, that's 2 times 400. If you could put them together somehow and show that, that would be a huge advantage. But I think when I came into the space too, it was very early inception. I probably should look at it again and see and embrace it again too with a different pair of eyes. Because when I started embracing it, it was about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So around the time he was starting the platform. And I'd be interested to see how it's changed. But there are so many platforms out there too that are, especially for people who leverage video, there are so many other video platforms out there too that are above and beyond. Most people don't even know they exist. but and they're above and beyond YouTube. Everyone thinks YouTube, YouTube, YouTube. I have to be on YouTube. I have to be the next YouTube sensation. That's the only way I'm going to grow this following. At the end of the day, what I share with people is, you know, when people come to me and say, I'd like to do a podcast, I'll say, okay, well, who's your audience? Okay, well, here's my audience. And I want to be on YouTube and I want to be here. I'm like, okay, well, is your audience there? Well, no. I said, well, then why do you need to be there? Like, if your audience isn't engaging YouTube, why are you there? We've been trained that this is the place to go. But not everyone is using it the same way as we think they are. As you said, Roy, probably more people are leveraging the fact that, you know, when they're on the treadmill, when they're making dinner, they're listening using a Spotify or an Apple Podcasts or another podcast channel, because it is portable. They don't need to engage with the video. So there's and a
like
huge
with the YouTube, because I mean you're like myself. Like, I've interviewed hundreds. I mean, I've something like 1,200 interviews already, yeah. And with more. And like, I'd research all the different people with their YouTube, and there's so many. They have tiny YouTube channels, and it's like, because it just doesn't work on that. And they think, I'll put up a video because there's people doing stupid stuff and they get a million views. And they think that, how can he do this? And I'm doing something brilliant, giving fantastic content. And we just have to kind of, so like, I mean, there's BitChute. Like, for example, I got kicked off YouTube with my Awakening podcast because they didn't like what I was exposing. But what I did is I took a screenshot of that. And I started posting that everywhere and saying, I'm on BitChute as well. And I went from the top 1% to the top 0.5% with that podcast. And then basically my BitChute took, I mean, the BitChute is, it's past the 250,000 now at the moment. But I mean, like, it's doing way better than the YouTube would have done anyway, because not everybody would see that. And sometimes even if you look at the YouTube, because... And you'll see some channels do millions and they're talking about similar stuff. It's controlled opposition. And people are kind of going, how can they can do it? And I can't do it. And I think that it's like, if you're on the side, the right side, they'll allow you to do what you want. And it's just to be conscious of that. So when you're on different, like Rumble, there's Odyssey and everything.
Yep.
But I think also like, we have to not do too many. Cause like, I do the ones that serve me and I see it. And I don't push the ones that I, like say the crypto doesn't really work on YouTube, but when I put it on my own personal channel, then it does. So I started putting all of my ones on my channel, and I just have the playlists. And I was thinking I might hurt myself, but it's building. I mean, it's got like 2,400 followers or whatever subscribers. It's not too bad, but you know, so it's chugging away. It's making stuff. But then there's other ones that you just guide them, or the podcast can do. You've seen that, and you see it with your clients. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the audio will do 10 times better than any video channel, and it is what it is. You can try to do the magic formula. We all want to try to do the different things. Like, I've seen people do the TikTok, and they get 500,000 followers and everything. And then I started doing the TikTok, and I got one video, got 13,500, and then I got 9 strikes. And I'm like, I'm not putting, and I wasn't even the Polish one. Like, I was like, I'm not putting my time into this, because probably the next strike I'm gone. And there's nothing worse than when you're building something and it just gets taken away.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you're not the only person that's mentioned that too about YouTube. And it sounds like, you know, it sounds like Roy and I are bashing YouTube. We're not. It's just a reality where when you put your content on YouTube, you don't own it. You don't have control over it. YouTube decides whether or not they want it there. That's how they can just remove it and say, okay, it's ours. Yeah, okay, you probably still have a copy of it somewhere, but it's on their channel, it's theirs. They can decide what they want to do. If somebody complains, boom, it's gone. Or it's not going to get the traction because it's not, you know, it leans too far one way or the other, or it's not, you know, they don't like the way it looks. But the other issue too is the fact that it, like you said, it's only one channel. It's only one. And the other thing that I, and again, maybe I'm a stick in the mud when it comes to this, but do I really want to sit there and watch two talking heads just talk back and forth? How am I engaged by that? If one of them is doing jazz hands every 2 minutes, or there's a visual that I need to see, okay, fine. Thank you for doing the jazz hands, by the way. For our listening audience, Roy just did a big jazz hands, right? And now so did I. There you go. But if you're listening, you don't care. You don't see it, right? That's the point. And the other challenge too is, again, I mentioned earlier about being in radio and theater of the mind. There's a way to speak and engage your audience that you don't see, and you make it sound like you're talking to them as if they're sitting across the kitchen table from you. That is a skill. That is an art. And Mike, I think you're very good at it, but a lot of podcasters are not. And they say, well, I need the video because people need to see what I'm doing. No, you think they do, but they don't. But if you can embrace the fact that the audio, here's the power of the audio too. This is, you know, and again, not to bash the video space, but here's the power of the audio. Post a video here, Roy, here's your challenge. Post a video, remove all the captions and remove the audio. How powerful is that video now? It's not. It has no power because all, you know, if you, and I'm actually working on a presentation, a talk about this that I'm going to be giving about the power of the audio, because you can, again, engage people so in-depthly just with the audio that you can convince using theater of the mind. And again, not that that's not mind games or anything, but you can convince people that anything is possible because you're playing theater of the mind with them. And in a good way, of course. One of the best examples I can think of is when I was in college, I studied radio broadcasting in here in Canada. And one of the entry points was they'd bring all the students in for first year, that all the people who were applying say, okay, welcome. And we hope you get chosen to come to the class. And here's radio and here's what it's all about. So they did a presentation. And at the end of that presentation, what they would do is they would play a recording, and I can't find it. I'm looking for it, but I can't remember if it was made in-house, meaning the college made it, or if it's a famous person that made it. And it was making the world's largest ice cream sundae. And what would that look like? And they taught, you know, that you hear this bulldozer in the background that's scraping what sounds like a big, you know, concrete vat of ice cream that then goes plop into, and then one into, another one on. And then you hear the cascading of what sounds like a waterfall, because that's all the chocolate syrup going onto the ice cream. And then you hear the sound of this helicopter flying over top to drop the world's biggest cherry on top. Bloop. That's theater of the mind. And that's the power of the audio. And man, I just rambled on about that, but that's the power of it. And you don't need video to bring that to life. You just need some creativity, maybe a little bit of skill set and practice. That's why, you know, that's why Roy's here. That's why, you know, I'm here too. But it's amazing what you can do with that. There's a challenge. Turn off your video. Try just doing audio.
And even on the public speaking, like, I encourage people to do both. One, look at how you're actually doing, and the other is just listen. Because some people, they're watching, they record their speech and they just look and listen. And it's a different message. It's a different skill set. You one, mute 100%. It and look and see how they are. The other is turn it around and just listen. And you're going, oh, that didn't sound the way that in my head I had this little story. So, and just going back onto the YouTube, because a lot of people think I'm going to make a fortune on YouTube. And I like with what we're doing with the coaching, if you actually try to do a pay per click or whatever, you're paying up to $5 on stuff like that if you want that. And I mean, that doesn't mean you're getting a customer. You can have a, you know, 100 people and they mightn't buy one. So it's a high investment. And 100%. Then with my Polish podcast, because that's actually the YouTube channel is doing very well. And it's like over 1.2 million views. And I monetize it at about 400,000, the last 400,000 views. And I've made about $400 from that. So even though they're charging us that much to advertise on that, they're paying you less than 0.5%. It's so, you know, and people think, oh, I'll make, because they look at the likes of Mr. Beast or whatever, they've got billions of views, which in turn, that 0.5% adds up. And then that's why it looks like you make massive money. So I think sometimes people think that's how you're going to monetize your podcast. And I would say, no, it's a good medium, you know, with different ones. And there's a lot of them, but it's just something to be conscious of as well. Because a lot of people, they don't know that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to just monetization. That's another can of worms we should talk about. But I did want to quickly jump on something that you mentioned there about with public speaking and being on the physical stage, or even being on a virtual stage. I remember in Toastmasters, one of my mentors, whenever he would give me an evaluation, as I'm speaking, as he's listening to my talk, and again, in Toastmasters, it's only 5 to 7 minutes long, but he would sit there and he would keep his eyes open for the first, I don't know, 2-3 minutes, and then he would close his eyes.
And it wasn't that you were putting him to sleep. He was actually just
cheating. No, he was listening to get exactly, it's exactly what he was doing. He was listening to the tone of your voice, to the timbre, to the rate, to the pitch, to everything, so he could hear how it's sounding and if it's matching the message, and he could see where my gestures were going. And every now and again, he'd be like listening and then open an eye and look, right? So is he gesturing in the right way? Is he on the right spot on the stage? Like, so he kind of do both. You're like eyes closed, eyes open. Like he'd do that, but he would close his eyes. Sometimes he'd like sit there with his eyes closed and he'd be listening. He'd be nodding his head. He'd make a note. He'd close his eyes again, make a note. And it's distracting if you don't know what they're doing, but that's how he was. And he gave me some of the best evaluations ever because he was able to not only say, okay, looks good. Because let's admit, on a physical stage, it needs to look good. It can be very distracting if a speaker is doing the Tulsaloosa two-step, walking back and forth all the time. But it can also be equally distracting if the voice isn't matching the message, right? That's the power of that. Did you want to talk about monetization?
And just like while we're on the speaking, because I've kind of covered it, and I've had a few of the world champions of the Toastmaster on the show, and nice. There's other people that have kind of touched on Toastmasters and then get out of it, and they do their own kind of courses. Like, you can tell somebody that has just done Toastmasters, and they're doing it kind of like to appease the judges, and it is not my type of speech that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I love the argument. I mean, I'm DTM. I was late to the game in learning public speaking, but I joined I formed a club and I just really embraced it. I love it. But I think that they don't reward the creative speaker, and it has to be black and white. And that's why a lot of people kind of step away from it and they think it hasn't served them.
I did exactly the same thing. I had to step away. When I got serious about being a speaker trainer, I knew right away that Toastmasters is a great program for anyone that needs to overcome a speech impediment or, you know, fear of speaking or just needs to practice. It's a great stage. So stage time, stage time, stage time. Darren McCroy from down in the States, he says it all the time. Stage time. It's great for stage time. But when you're ready to be serious about being on a stage as a keynote speaker, as a workshop presenter, tour the conference circuit, whatever it is, and you want to make money as a speaker, or even add that as part of what you do within your business. So for me, I'm a podcast strategist. I also speak on podcasts, but I also speak on stages. That's a different kind of speaking. And you need to know how to speak on a stage. It's not just about speaking for 5 to 7 minutes and being, you know, dramatic or impressive for a panel of judges. It's about your message. It's about audience engagement. It's about what your call to action. It's about all of those things that unfortunately Toastmasters doesn't cover. So anyone that's ever, and maybe I'm going out on a limb by saying this, but I would say everyone that's been on the big stage for Toastmasters and won the competition, so the world champions, that have continued on, they have gotten training somewhere else. Even if it's from a world champion that's gotten training somewhere else, they've still embraced training above and beyond what that program offers for that very reason, that there is a limit. And it totally makes sense that that's who the organization serves. It's kind of like, you know, a fast food restaurant will not likely ever make a Kansas City steak dinner. They just won't do it because that's not their audience. That's not who they're serving. But a good steakhouse will always have a Kansas City steak, possibly a gourmet burger too, by the way. But the two don't always meet. But good analogy there.
And with the one thing I like about the Toastmasters is it actually gets rid of the pause fillers, because I've seen people you would think impossible to cure, and then they get rid of it completely. And if I look, because we were talking prior to recording just about different podcasters that we like and everything, and one, I listened to all the shows, Patrick Vetdev. I think he's a fantastic interviewer, but because of probably my Toastmaster, his pause fillers, it's a shame, and I wish he would actually go away and train himself to take that out, because I don't think it's helping him. And I would think he's number one in the world once he does that. He might kind of cut some of the crew as well, because I don't think they're really serving him either. But I think that's a strategic thing, that he's got different sides of the fence on different opinions. But I'm just curious on your thoughts on that.
Oh, absolutely. I know I throw in the occasional aminah. If it was chronic, I'd say, yes, tell me it's chronic, I'll fix it. And I know that. And here's the challenge. It goes both ways. Because I remember when I would sit in Toastmasters meetings and you'd get the person counting the ums and the ahs and the other word fillers, right? Those ones, right? The big ones. My crutch word became actually. I was that good. I had to come up with another word. So
I said basically was my one.
Because we're that good. We get good, right? So we don't have ums and ahs. We have actually's. Or basically, right? But I would get the ah counter and I'd be like, oh yeah, Carl, you had three ums. Okay. And again, this is later on in a 5 to 7 minute presentation, I don't think I would ever have any. But in a 10, 15 minute, 20 minute educational session and I have only three ums, that's pretty good. That's not a problem. It's when you have three ums and ahs every 10 seconds, that's a problem. So there is the difference. So it works to correct those crutch words and fillers, but it almost gets to a point where once you're cognizant of your words and you understand that, one of the things I learned going through speech therapy, because I used to stutter when I was a kid, one of the things I learned was the only person in control of your speaking is you. Once you learn that and you learn how to form words and not be worried about the fact that if you pause and you don't say like so, because it's, again, it can be part of our vernacular depending on where we are in the world. Some places in the world, they don't have verbal crutches like we do. Anyhow, once you know that, now all of a sudden you can form your message and you can leverage the power of the pause to your advantage. And you want to pause where necessary, of course. You don't want to put in a long pause like that because it's not positioned the right way. That's where the magic really happens. But to your point, really being able to understand, and I think part of it, Roy, also goes to, I think it goes back to confidence. I think the reason why, I think it goes to confidence, but I also think it goes to something that we, I don't want to say it's something that we learned as kids, but somewhere we learned or we thought in our own minds, I don't know, that when we're speaking, we have to always be speaking. So if we're up at the front of the room speaking, if we're not reading from the page in front of us, we should be putting in ums and ahs and filler words because that keeps the flow of the dialogue. Doesn't need to be that way, right? So I don't know if there's a truth behind any of that, but that's kind of the feeling, because I'll have people who have, are folks who've come to me in the past when I was doing speaker training and really focused on that, and I would count their ums and ahs, not as detailed as, say, you might in Toastmasters, but I'd be aware of them. And I say, you know what? Just be aware of them. And people aren't in some cases. And then I'd really analyze where and how they're doing it. Not that they're doing it, but where and how. So if they get to the end of the sentence before they start another one. So do they start their new sentence with an ? And is that because of anxiety? Is that because of something that's been bred into them. That's so it's really analyzing why it's there. But yeah, good. That's my two cents on the filler words.
And
actually, that's my, and actually, I'll leave it at that.
There was one guy that we had in our club, and I used to pull him on it, and he'd go, and he'd extend the end. That was his way of thinking. We had devices for making the sound, and there was advantages and disadvantages, because right. It was, you'd hear bing, bing, bing. And I've seen it work, but I've also seen it people just freak out, and the noise was just freaking them out, that they decided, no, I prefer you just tell me. But I think what you mentioned, just being conscious of it, and then you realize, okay, I need to do less of this.
Yeah, I think, and again, I think it's also education. So it's not, and that's the beauty of the organization as well. And that's the beauty of even going beyond that and helping people in the speaker training world, was I could assist people beyond just an evaluation. So when they would say, well, how do I get rid of my ums and ahs? It's like, okay, well, let me show you what that looks like. When you think you're coming to one, pause. If it's the wrong place to pause, just keep going. If you're nervous and you need to take a breath, it's okay to do that. The audience likely isn't going to notice, but it goes back to the only person in control of your speaking is you. And the other part of that, by the way, is something I learned in radio broadcasting, is the audience doesn't know what you don't tell them, because that sometimes is the trepidation as well, which is where we're trying to remember things. So we're throwing in the ums and ahs to keep the pattern of our conversation going with the audience and trying to remember all the words of our speech. We throw in those ums and ahs because that's the way we've been trained. And we want to share with the audience absolutely everything. And as a speaker, Roy, you know that if you think in threes, it's probably a good place to be. I'm not saying be formulaic and say three things I wanted to cover today. You don't have to have every talk structured that way. But if you think in terms of that, you don't have to give the world the top three, every presentation, the top 300 things you need to know to go about your day as a good person. A top three is a good start. Right. So if you could pare that back, and I'll share this with podcasters too. And I don't know if you do this, Roy, as well, but sometimes when people are wrestling with podcasting content, I don't know what I'm going to podcast. I've got so many ideas. It's like, okay, well, break them down. Can you do a 5-part series on X, Y, and Z, as opposed to let's do X, Y, and Z in a 2-hour episode? No, break it down and make it simple and digestible for the audience. And I think, again, it goes back to, I have so much I want to share with you. If I don't put it all into this next 20 minutes or this 7-minute speech or whatever it is, oh my goodness, I've lost my opportunity. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. It's not your 15 minutes of fame where you only have that 15 minutes on a stage in front of the world. The Toastmaster setting, you've got your next meeting. On a podcast, you've got the next episode. With a guesting spot, maybe the host will invite you back. Roy, it's been a great conversation. I hope you invite me back for part two. But seriously, you have that opportunity. And again, going back to the audience doesn't know, you don't tell them.
Absolutely. And that's a question that a load of clients will ask you. How long should my podcast be?
No less than 7 hours. And I know you're laughing your butt off hysterically right about now. And I think there again is a huge, shall we open the Pandora's box and really get into this one? A podcast episode should be as long as it needs to be. There are podcast episodes out there that I have worked on that are 2-3 minutes long. There are podcast episodes out there that are 2 hours long. My immediate response to that is, how long can your audience, or is your audience willing to engage with your content? And the sweet spot, there's been a lot of research done on this, and the sweet spot is somewhere between 25 and 35 minutes. Less is better. More is okay too. But if it's more, it better be more, in my opinion, with value. If there's no value and you're just trying to hit the 60-minute mark, you're doing your audience a disservice, and you're doing yourself a disservice as well, especially if you're using your podcast for business. it's not as segmented as radio and television, where you have programs that are 30 minutes or 60 minutes or 90 minutes, and you have to hit those marks. You can have a 12-minute podcast, and you know what? Your audience will love you. You can have a 39-minute podcast, and your audience will love you. They'll come back if your content is engaging enough to keep them there for that time. So I say as long as it needs to be. Some of my shortest episodes, I think, are 6, 7, 8 minutes. And I haven't had many go over 35 minutes.
With me, my Polish one can be 5 to 10 minutes. And that's been number one in a lot of countries. And it's right in the top 5%. My awakening, my on the YouTube, the is actually a longer episode. Mm-hmm. That if we talk about sovereignty and stuff like that. And I've often done live ones, and we've often went over 2 hours. And that gets massive. So as you say, I mean, if you look at Rogan or whatever, there, or even Patrick Bet, they tend to be about 2 hours. It, and one of the things that I think people make the mistake of, some people say, okay, yeah, I've heard that as well, the 25, 30 minute. And sometimes I try to do that. And it's more due to the actual time of editing and getting it out later. You go, oh, half an hour might take me double that time or whatever. Yeah, that. And if it goes on longer, you know, but the problem with that, and I've seen people do it, there's a fantastic conversation and they cut it short because they're trying to get into the 30 minutes. Right. And you should, like, if you know something is flowing and go good, don't be regimental in your, this is a 30 minute podcast.
Yep, 100%. And here's what I say. If you know your audience is only going to engage you for 30 minutes, and that's your goal, and you've just had an hour long conversation or however long it is, and you're like, how am I going to pare this back to 30 minutes? Guess what? You potentially now have a part one and a part two. And there's nothing wrong with having part one on Tuesday and releasing part two on Thursday. You're going to get double the pleasure because you're going to be engaging your audience twice in that week. I quite often will have one of my clients, she'll do a workshop series on her podcast. So Monday through Friday, Monday, part one, part two, part three, part four, part five, of whatever the series is about. And again, this goes back to the strategy or the content and how are you structuring it? And I think that sometimes as podcasters, especially newbies coming into the space, is what we forget. We think, if I just have to open the mic and have a conversation with somebody, I don't need to have a strategy. There is a strategy to it. There's no set rule you have to play by, but understand that there are some things that work and work well. Sometimes, depending on the podcast, shorter and sweeter is better. An engaging conversation that goes on for 2 hours, Roy, as you said, that's okay too. But it wouldn't necessarily be okay for me to sit there on camera or recording audio by myself for 2 hours, unless it's really engaging, really engaging conversation. Yeah. That's a strategy. Yeah. So I think, again, it goes back to not just how long it should be. It's how long can your audience engage you? And it's okay to have some flexibility. Don't shackle yourself to 30 minutes, 25 minutes. You might have some that are 7 minutes long. Your producer will love you. Less time, But you might have some that are 2 hours long. Your producer will take longer to edit it, but it's still okay. And when we're working with clients, obviously we look for the balance. Say, how long is your podcast approximately going to be? Because when you start looking at dollars and cents of leveraging an agency to put your show together, you need to have an approximation.
Yeah, especially if you're planning on editing for them, because they can say, I'm doing a half-hour podcast, and then they give you like two episodes that are an hour each, and you can't be pricing. It's not in a...
Exactly. And that's where, again, that's the other thing is that's where, and I've had that discussion with clients too, where I say, you gave me an hour-long episode. They're supposed to be 20 minutes. Do you want me to make this a two-parter? Oh, yeah, sure, do that. It's easy, right? So, and every now and again, you might have to go back and say, well, can you do a quick introduction, carry on the conversation? Because maybe there isn't a good natural place to cut it. But that's an easy editing thing. But, I don't think you have to pigeonhole yourself and say, oh, it has to be 20 minutes or, oh, anything more than 45 minutes, people won't be listening. That's possibly true. Maybe that is the case. But again, I go back to how long will your audience engage you? And I think I think for a new podcaster, again, unless you have an audience, some credibility, some fame, whatever it is behind you, where people will listen regardless. People will listen to Oprah Winfrey, Tony Robbins, you know, Joe Rogan for all the tea in China and, you know, a month of Sundays. They'll listen forever, right? But will they listen that long to Carl Richards? I don't know. But that's why I also say, let's keep it to 30 minutes.
And like we touched on it earlier, the monetization, because like we both know that there's a load get involved and they get excited podcasting. And that, like, what I love is when you kind of take them through the process yourself, you set them up that they're not going to be the ones that come in and do 3 episodes and then they're done. But unfortunately, a lot do it themselves, or they're not getting the right guidance and everything like that. But one of the main things that why people throw in the towel, they think, I'm going to make a fortune doing this. There's going to be 1 million people listening to me, and this is going to be the best thing ever. And then there's crickets, and there's like maybe 10 downloads for them or whatever it is. But there's others that are doing it, and they're doing a good job, but they're not monetizing. So I suppose let's touch on monetizing, because I think people deserve reward when they're creating content that's actually of value.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And here's the short answer to everything. When people start talking to me about monetization, I say, you know what? Podcasting is a long game. It's not a short game. Have you ever done a podcast before? Well, no. Okay. Well, then understand, unless you are Joe Rogan, Oprah Winfrey. So unless you have either celebrity status or you have a deep number of people on your email list, if you have a 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 person email list, or you have a community that you have built because of who you are, online community is what I'm referring to, in-person community too, sure, why not, but certainly an online community that you get some traction up front, perfect, good for you. That's a very small percentage, I would say, of most people coming into the podcasting space. So again, I think it goes back to understanding it's a long game. And then the second thing is, you're not going to be a superstar overnight. And honestly, trust that the more you do it, the more your audience will build. Now, you're part of that audience. You're part of that equation. You can't just put a podcast out there and say, I've built it, come to me. You can't do that. And again, unless you're Oprah Winfrey or Tony Robbins or somebody like really worldly famous, that's not going to happen. Which means you do need to put in a little bit of sweat equity, or your team needs to really work hard. You know, some of the people we work with they already have a marketing strategy, and it's just adding the podcast to that marketing strategy to say, I have a podcast. That's the biggest thing, Roy. I don't know if you've experienced this. People launch their podcast and then they say, I have a podcast. You should go listen to it. Don't whisper it to me. Shout it from the highest mountain or cell phone tower or whatever it is that you have a podcast, and get it out there with a bang. And that's going to give you some traction. That traction is what leads to monetization. And monetization isn't just about, I have a show, give me money. Monetization is, in my opinion, a number of different things. I have a colleague who's been podcasting for about 10 years now, and how he monetizes, he actually doesn't charge to be on his podcast, but he leverages his podcast through a joint venture partnership. So you get to do webinars with him, Facebook Lives, you get to embrace his 40,000 or 50,000 person Facebook community with your posts and socials and all kinds of stuff like that. Oh, and by the way, you get a guest spot on his podcast. And you also get to infiltrate, politely, of course, his email list that has another 75,000 people on it. But that joint venture partnership is worth $6,000. Is it worth it? Yes. And that's how he monetizes the podcast. So joint venture is a great way to leverage. And again, upfront, if you only have 10 listeners, it might not work. But if you have a community and you really want to leverage some of the things that you do, the way you embrace your community as a coach, as a subject matter expert, that can be to your advantage, as opposed to trying to get your 11 billion downloads or subscribers to then go to such and such a company and say, give me money. Or sign up on one of these sites that says, well, if you have 10,000 listeners, we'll give you a couple of pennies here and there, right? You've probably seen that model. And it's
like 10 bucks per 1,000 download. And I'll give an example on that. And we can continue. There's a sure. Polish company that is like, we're the first in Poland and whatever. And I was just curious because, I mean, I've got my own kind of strategies. I said, all right, let's see. This might work. My Polish podcast has got a massive audience here as well as international. So they looked for all this information, sent it. No reply, no nothing. Because they, you know, I wrote first and then I rang. Then I phoned, they didn't answer. Then I got them, oh, sorry, I didn't get through. Have heard no more since. Like, and there's so many unprofessional people involved in this space that it's a shame because they're hurting those that are trying to help people, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that... There are a lot of unprofessional people in a lot of spaces, Roy, but you're right when it certainly comes to that. And I think it's because we do put an emotional attachment to the almighty dollar that it, in some cases it's, and I understand it. I understand it from a sponsorship perspective. You're thinking, okay, what's the value? What am I going to get out of it? I understand that perspective. But it needs to be approached differently, especially as a, you know, again, somebody new coming into the podcasting space thinking, I'm going to create a podcast. I'm going to ask people to give me money. Doesn't work that way. What about showcasing or highlighting your expertise, you know, your intellectual property, putting it out there and saying, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I do. Obviously, it doesn't work for every podcast. If you're doing a, you know, one of the top podcast formats is true crime. Okay, for a true crime podcast, it doesn't work that way. But certainly if you're leveraging the podcast.
Unless you're a hitman and you're looking.
Well, exactly. I can do that gig for you for a small price. But shh, don't tell anybody. And I won't say you have a podcast about it. But no, seriously, you can really, you know, leverage that. And or, again, it goes back to what I mentioned about call to action. Are you just a talking head visually or audibly for 20, 30, 40 minutes an hour? Or are you driving people back to your website where there's checklists, there's PDFs, there's downloadables, there's audibles, there's whatever the tool is that you've just shared over that 20 minutes? Are you giving people that CTA, that call to action that says, you know what, everything I've just talked about, it's on my checklist, go get it, it's in the show notes. That's the roadmap. That's the roadmap. And will people do it? Not all the time, but sometimes they will. And then you know what? That person that does that and calls you up or sends you an email, because that's typically what we do now in this modern world, is we don't just call people on the telephone, but they send you an email and say, hey, I listen to your podcast on a regular basis. I'd love to have a Zoom call with you. I'd love to work with you. Not work for you, but work with you. I think you can help me. You just got a client out of that. That's the power of monetization. And that's the power of leveraging what you don't even need to go out and get, because if you position your content the right way, it's a win-win. If you have big numbers, then by all means, yes, leverage sponsorship or joint ventures, like I mentioned earlier. But if you just have, you know, your business and it's going well and you want to leverage that, there's so many ways to do that. So many ways to do that.
And sometimes, depending on the service that you've got, but sometimes the guests that come on are a potential customer and they realize just from the conversation that you had, I want to work with this guy. And that's without even pushing it. Like they actually, I've landed a few as well. They've asked me. They just kind of realize what I'm doing. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing when that happens? I got off a call with a woman a couple of years ago. And she was doing the podcast guesting circuit. And I asked her how it was going. This is after we'd done our recording. I said, how's that going for you? She says, it's going really well. I said, you know what? Have you ever thought of having your own show? Because our interview was just so amazing. And she said, Yeah, possibly. But I'm really doing the guesting thing now. She says, is that something that you do? This is before I really had my marketing down to a science. I was still transitioning during the COVID period. And I said, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. And she's now a client. She's a great client. She's wonderful. Started out as a guest on my show. Right? You know, you've hit a magic button when, right?
No, absolutely. You mentioned it earlier. Oh, sometimes people say, I get you back. I love talking about this, so we have to get you back because I don't want to split this into two episodes because I think we've so many things that we can cover because it's fantastic. And I love the advice that we're giving people because I think a lot of people think they can't do it. I think you need to be really technical and everything. It's actually simple to do. If I can do it, anyone can do it. That's the way I look at it. I brought in a guy how to edit it. He showed me, and the reality is it's actually very easy. You think you have to... Yeah. You know, but there's also the beauty is there's lots of people out there that can help you when we just want to do the recording, pass it on, they do the marketing, they do the everything, and we do that for people as well. And I know you do that as well.
Yep.
And it's beautiful because one, you get to actually listen to episodes as well yourself that you kind of go, oh, this is cool. So it's like, it's brilliant. I mean, you've had interviews with people and you've probably changed your life based on conversations. I know that's another advantage of the podcasting. But what I would love, Carl, is to get you back again, definitely, because I think, you know, there's plenty of value for our listeners, but you might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Well, firstly, Roy, I would love to be back. Thank you for allowing me to spew and just like really leverage my opinion, maybe in a strong arm kind of way a few times here. It's been a phenomenal conversation. And I have to say, I'd love to have you on my show, by the way. So we'll take that offline and we'll talk about that. But the power of this space is amazing. And I know that you and I have talked about this offline too. There's more than enough work to go around to keep Roy and I happy for the next, as long as we're alive on this planet, I'm sure. But certainly if you want to have a conversation with me, it's podcastsolutionsmadesimple.com is the website. Some great tools there, great resources. I'd love to have a conversation with you. And hey, if I think you're a better fit with Roy, I'll say go work with Roy, to be quite honest. That's what I'll do. I always enjoy having conversations with people. And even if you think that you'd be a good fit on my show, love to hear from you too. So there's an opportunity there for anyone who wants to get into this space, test drive it, be on a podcast. If you're a fit, love to have a conversation with you. Thanks, Roy.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure I put the link button, the audio and the video. And for those watching, his QR code is there, which helps as well, just like my one. So thanks very much. And until next week, take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.